Meeting is now being recorded.
Well, I would like to welcome everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 2 Legal Regulatory Issues Call on the 1st of March, 2018. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. As a reminder to all participants, please state your name before speaking for recording purposes. And please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn the meeting back over to Sophia Bing.
Thank you, Ms. Hi, everyone. This is Sophia speaking. And welcome to the WhatsApp to call today. Happy Chinese New Year, the Year of Dog, of course. First of all, just as usual, we would like to ask anybody have an SOI update, and so please speak up. I hear no response, so I assume there's no SOI update for now. Today we're going to discuss the progress document that we presented and put together by the staff and also Michael and me. The two topics we would like to cover today is the TLD rollout and contractual compliance. Initially, we would like to cover the three topics and also the last topic is the global interest. However, we were not able to cover that because the three topics are really too much for a one-hour call. We will definitely cover that in our next call, assuming up to the ICOM meetings in Puerto Rico. I'm seeing that you already have the progress documents. You can see this on the screen. If not, there is a link in the agenda page. It's better to take that link and open the browser. It's easier to review it and download it. So for the TLD, as last time, as Michael did for the last call, we actually didn't went into all the details for the deliberation overview. We just focused on the high-level agreement and also the next step for those two topics so that we have more time to discuss the important next steps. So I think I will assume that we can do the same thing for this call. Would that be okay? All right, as a Japanese, I can say yes. So, first of all, the TLD rollout. We have two calls regarding the TLD rollout, after the discussion and deliberation, we reached the high-level agreement on the board tracks. Is generally agreed that if the delegation deadlines remains in place for subsequent procedure, the time frame using the 2012 round new GTLD application remains appropriate. The second high-level agreement also is the World Track members supported making the recommendation that the ICON organizations should be responsible for meeting specific deadlines when in applications and delegation processes, and noting that issues may be also covered under the topic of the applicability in the other work track. As for the high-level agreement, if any questions and any concerns there, one thing I would ask the group, to see whether the summary of the high-level agreement is appropriate here. Okay. Michael, I saw your had your hands up. Go ahead.
Thank you, Sophia. I just wanted to kind of offer a little bit more background material in regards to what this is specifically. So TLD rollout was an issue that deals with the time period, the deadline for applicants to delegate their TLDs once they have approval from ICANN, and that includes all the necessary steps such as signing the registry agreement, doing PDT, and then delegating. And what we did was we just to provide material in regards to how we deliberated on this topic originally was that we reached out to everyone and we asked whether or not this 9-month delegation was an issue, and a good majority of the feedback said no. If we are able to work through in the future what we with the issues we've already had, if we're able to go forward with that, then 9 months, for a lot of them, 9 months really shouldn't be a problem. So whereas not changing on the area of 9 months for an applicant to delegate, it would be more beneficial to look at areas where we could explore perhaps setting deadlines against ICANN in some aspects rather and also in other ways looking at how deadlines could be better communicated, as there did seem to be some issues that came up for some applicants that we kind of got a lot of good feedback in regards to, out of CC2 from this. So that's just a little bit of background material that why we're reaching these high-level agreements and what we're looking at doing for next steps as well. Yeah, sorry, Steve, it's 9 months to complete contracting and 12 months to complete delegation. My apologies, it's a past midnight here. So I will move over to Jeff then.
Okay, hey guys, it's Jeff Newman. Sure. One of the other things that we also asked the group, as well as seeking comment on, was whether there should be, or right now, the only thing that's required, as Michael explained, was that the NIC.TLD needs to be delegated. And there's no requirement of any kind in terms of usage. So so long as someone delegates the NIC.TLD with all of those requirements, there's no other requirements in the agreement or elsewhere that the registry use the top-level domain. And as many of you know, there are a number of TLDs that still only have NIC.TLD delegated without any additional registration. So one of the questions that was asked for community comment was whether anyone felt like this was okay or whether it needed to change. And generally, as Michael said, there was not much appetite in the working group or in the comments that we received to define usage or delegation in any other way other than having the NIC.TLD site up and whois.nic.tld up. So that's another thing that was, at this point, no one seems to have provided a counter to that. So we could say that there is high-level agreement so far that the only requirement in the contract for use is the required NIC.TLD and whois.nic.tld.
I saw Ellen is next one.
Thank you very much.
Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Marjorie. First, a question that Jeff may know the answer to, and then I'll make my comment. Do we have any idea how many TLDs are in that area of only having the NIC.TLD or perhaps a very, very small number of second-level domains registered but clearly not using it in a practical sense?
Well, thanks, Alan. We can easily find out how many just have the NIC.TLD that's delegated, because that's a pretty easy thing once you have a centralized zone file and that data is fairly regularly available. What would be harder was kind of the second part of your question, which made an assumption that a few registrations doesn't mean that it's being used. So one name delegated, there are likely to be a couple hundred of those, at least of certain brands. As far as few registrations, I think that would require much more analysis in beyond the NIC.tld delegation.
Okay, thank you. I guess the point is the high-level rationale for new TLDs was to increase competition and to give users options, and we all know all of those words. Clearly, a TLD which only has NIC or only has one other, if we added a rule saying you must have more than NIC, then obviously anyone could add an X.TLD and it meets the criteria and still has no real additional use. So I'm not sure there's any merit in saying you must have more than NIC. But is there any merit? Are we satisfying any ultimate long-term goal other than protecting the TLD from someone else getting it by allowing a TLD to be delegated but effectively not used? Nice revenue for ICANN, I guess. But is there any real merit in it? Are we? And that's the question that I think we have to answer. I'm not sure which, what the answer is. But I think really I have to look at why are we allowing it if we are, and if we are, that's fine. But I think we need to ask, are we satisfying some long-term purpose or just allowing people to protect a particular TLD, protect a particular string, rather. Thank you.
Thank you. I think, I thought, Jeff, you still have your hands on
Hands up.
Do you like comment on it?
Yeah, I think it's a new comment, and I just wanted to add to respond to Alan. The issue with looking back at the last round and making an inference of those TLDs that just have one registration, it's difficult because ICANN took years, literally, from the application date to finalizing the agreement to finalizing name collision issues and everything else, such that I would, from clients I work with, at least, there are a number of them that changed over staff multiple times in between when the application was submitted and when ultimately they were able to be delegated. It was years. So there were a number of TLDs and a number of my clients that had initially intended to use it when they applied, but by the time with ICANN's delays and the fact that, to use some of the brand's language, ICANN was seen as a joke to some of them because the delays kept coming and kept coming and kept coming. And the 4 years between when they applied and when they could be delegated, they had changed over so many times. There just wasn't an interest anymore. So that goes towards ICANN's credibility. So any kind of looking back and making a judgment call on how those TLDs are using it is not going to be effective, I think. It's going to be it's going to give us unreliable results. However, that said, if we were in a utopian world where ICANN actually met its deadlines and where the evaluations and there wasn't name collision things and there wasn't a changing of the rules and the contracts and the other requirements on such a steady basis, you'd have to have a utopian type environment to do that kind of study. And even to make any kind of policy assessment as to whether we support the notion, as Kathy puts it, I guess Kathy called it a lame duck TLD delegation. It's kind of impossible to look back and even to look ahead if we can't get ICANN to have a predictable short process for evaluating and signing agreements and having use measured. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. Ellen, you're next.
I think Christina was next.
Sophia, I think Christina was next. Oh.
Sorry for that. Christina?
Sure. Christina Rosette from Amazon. I would caution the sub-team to be careful about making assumptions about what the fact that there's only NIC.tld means. We have no way to know how many cases these are TLDs where business plans are being developed, and in particularly in larger organizations that are hoping to make innovative uses of their TLDs, developing the business plan, getting approval for it, and rolling it out is not something that takes place overnight. So I would just caution folks about making assumptions about what the existence of just NIC.tld means. And I would encourage folks to not assume that putting any kind of requirement to the contrary would otherwise change what happens in the next procedure.
Thank you, Christina. That's a fair point there. So, Ellen, you can go ahead, please.
Yep, thank you. With regard to Jeff's intervention, I really don't have any interest in looking back and seeing why it happened last time. The question in my mind is, should we put any restriction on going forward, or is it okay to say that if someone, for whatever reason, whether it's long-term planning or they simply have decided they simply want to sit on the TLD, that they paid their money, they're willing to pay the annual fees, and why should they not be able to sit on it? And I think that may not be an unreasonable statement. Certainly for a dot brand, it's quite reasonable. For holding on to some other type TLD until, perhaps someone comes along and is willing to buy it from you, that may be more questionable. So we could conceivably have different rules for dot brands and other types of TLDs. But the real question is, do we have any problem with someone just sitting on it? My perspective for a dot brand, I have absolutely no problem with it. And for the other ones, I could create pretty good arguments why we don't want people to be hoarding them, to be stockpiling them and hoping someone comes along and will buy it from them, or someone comes up with a good business plan to use it. So I could come up with different arguments for the different types of TLDs. I'm not sure it's worth spending an awful lot of time on, but I think that's the aspect we have to look at. I don't think I care about the history, and we're certainly going to grandfather. We're not going to change the rules on the fly for the past ones. The question is that why we're doing this, and do we want to allow it? Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. I would like to mention one thing. If you look at the progress document in Next Step, there are two questions here. And first one is regarding the squatting and warehousing possibility in terms of whether the deadline and delegation deadline is the appropriate measure to prevent them. And the second question is, using TLD, and that relates to the brand TLD, whether you have a mixed up brand, and that is the meaning of using a TLD. I think Aaron has a fair point. We need to make sure that we there's a two different type of questions here. And one thing I also like to mention, maybe be worth it to ask the group is in the 2012 round, there is no specific definitions of what can proceed as a squatting and warehousing. So maybe it's worthwhile to also define that in our discussions. That if there's no clear definition, and then we should probably define it first, and then to see whether there is appropriate measures to prevent them. And also, in the 2012 round, we also do not have I don't know whether there's a definition of using a TLD from the 2012 round. It's appropriate. So we probably also need to discuss that. If there is no clear definition, and then we can to see we first need to define it and then relate it to the other issues and scenarios and develop the policy with it concerning those issues. Michael, I see you're the next. So please go ahead.
Thank you, Sophia. I just wanted to make sure that we know time. And you and Alan both make very good points. We could drag this conversation on very long, but I think we need to establish very quickly, is it worth it? And is that a road we want to head down? I don't mean to interject, but I think it would be a good practice if we might want to try the green arrows and the green if you agree and the X if you disagree practice here and just see, look at those two questions. Is the deadline necessary? And if so, was the last deadline, was that adequate? Would people want to change that in the future? And then for the next question would be, do we want to discuss about the definition of use within the work track? So perhaps if we start there, then we can work from there to form a basis for how we deliberate further. Can we do that and see where we stand?
Thank you, Michael. I agree with you in that point. And Jeff, would you like to comment on this?
It wasn't a comment on Michael's suggestion. It was more on some data I think we should get before we make assumptions that there are TLDs being hoarded, which I don't think is right. I put it into that we should probably get data on how many TLDs have just NIC.TLD delegated. And of those, how many of them are either Spec 13 or have a code of conduct exemption? Both of those would indicate that they are for use only by the entity or the entities, affiliates, licensees, et cetera. And I would think that just from anecdotal evidence, I would think that you'll find very few generic top-level, truly generic top-level domains that are not that do not have more than just nick.tld delegated. But we would have to get that data. But even once we get that data, we would then have to probably ask the registries themselves, of those that are not Spec 13 or Code of Conduct exempt, we would have to talk to them to see what the motivations are before assuming that there's hoarding going on. I think that's not appropriate for us to make that that kind of judgment. And I've noticed some comments here I think there's a comment from Christine Farley who says that she's against hoarding. We should investigate the past to form future policy. She says brands should not have special rules because there are other brand owners elsewhere interested in the same TLDs and some brands are generic work. Christine, those are good comments now reflected in the record. It would be great if you could provide some backup for that, namely that there are brand owners that have TLDs that are Spec 13 that are generic words, and that there's an interest in others to get that TLD. So I think that's making some assumptions, but certainly if we can find that data, then let's do that. There you go. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Jeff. I think that's good. That's good suggestions that we should design investigations on the NIC.TLDs, the numbers of it, and you know, and then going forward to see whether how we address that. Ellen, have a comment?
Thank you very much. I do see Steve has his hand up. Maybe we should go to Steve first.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, please. Steve, please go ahead.
Thanks, Alan. This is Steve Chan from STEF. And actually, I just wanted to clarify that. So the suggested request for data that Jeff posed, just trying to figure out if that's actually a request at this point, or maybe it's a question we could pose on the work track list to determine if there's support to ask that question. So for our purposes, we want to know if we want to take this request to the ICANN or to see and if we can try to get that answered. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve. We certainly will summarize this obstacle and ask group as the outcome of this call and whether the group will check support it. And Ellen, please go ahead.
Thank you very much. I went on record as saying that I would support allowing brands to hold on to the TLD without using it, but not others, or I suggested perhaps not others, and several people in the chat gave me what I think are probably reasonable reasons why we shouldn't do that. But I think maybe we want to go back to Sophia's question and say, can we define use? If we cannot define it, there's no point in trying to formulate a rule of who must use it and who does not need to use it if we can't define use. It's been said that if ICANN makes any rule, someone will figure out how to game it. And I think this is a pretty classic example. One could define use with the number of TLDs. You can always register more or get someone to register more. If we say it has to be offered by registrars, you can always contract with a registrar to offer it for $100,000 per second level domain and make sure no one's going to buy it. I'm not sure there is going to be a viable, practical method by which we can monitor this. And if there is none, then it's not worth having the discussion on who do we apply it to and who not. So I think the question of can we define use in a practical, real way is an important question to ask before we start deciding who to apply it to. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. That is one thing that needs to be deliberate further as in the leadership view. You know, whether we'd be able to defining use and also squatting and warehousing. You know, that is probably quite fundamental. And also from the PDP policy development perspective. Any other comments? And then we'd like to close out this TLD rollout topic and discuss further with the mailing list and also the progress documents going forward. All right. I see no hand raised right now, so we're gonna go to the we will progress with the contract compliance topic. So basically, regarding the contract compliance, the World Track is discussing and review and discuss the final report. Which could, excuse me one second, let me put out the page. So basically, the World Track noted in the initial report, Dino raised any specific issue under the contractual compliance topic. However, their concerns was raised in public comments about some specific operation practices. Therefore, the World Track was discussed and need to determine if some of the issues are within the scope and whether we want to address them. So, so for the high level, after the discussions, also the review of the 52 comments, some high level agreement so far is, the World Track seems to support recommending that the contract compliance publish, should publish more, granular and meaningful data on the activities of the department, and the nature of the compliance handled. For the next step, there are several issues area, that was, raised up, in the 52 comments and also in our discussion, as the roles, so in roles of the contract compliance, so we need to probably discuss that whether these topics of categories are relevant and should be in the scope for discussion. For example, I think there were three issues raised. First of it's arbitrary and abusive pricing for premium domains targeting trademarks. And the second one is use of the reserve names to circumvent Sunrise. And there's a third topic, the third issues was operating the launch programs that differed materially from what was approved by ICANN. So we need to, for this topic, and we need to determine if we want to, if it can scope and whether we want to make recommendation on those issues. And second, the World Track also needs to seek additional input on how representations made by the applicant should be integrated into the registry agreement in a subsequent procedure. And please note that these kind of discussions maybe independent to take place in the context of other conversations, such as the potential accommodations and the overarching topics of categories. So that's go back to whether seeking for more inputs on the summaries of high-level agreements, also whether those issues that raised by the comments in the CC2 comments and World Track are should be discovered and covered in this particular topic. And just to know that one thing I want to mention that those three questions, those three issues also was raised up in the base registry agreement topic. There is certain strong connections on the base registry agreement and contract compliance topics. So basically, it's also a question whether the three topics should be covered in base registry agreement scope as well. So that is the question to the group. Does anybody want to comment on it? So Michael, please go ahead.
Thanks, Sophia. Just to kind of supplement what you said, so what we're looking at right here is we're dealing with three topics here. Some that can be very controversial, like for example, the abusive pricing for premium domains targeting trademarks, the use of reserve names to circumvent Sunrise, and operating launch programs that are differed materially from what was approved by ICANN. These are topics that have been raised in some way, shape, or form within the issue report, as well as have been raised by different parties in the CC2 comments. We haven't had any significant discussion in these areas, but we do know that this is of particular interest for many. Also, it's good to note here that I believe the RPMs group might have given this to us as an area. Well, I think it might have been decided by the RPMs group that it wasn't in scope on their side. Jeff can provide more input in regards to that. But as Sophia stated, the main issue what we're looking at right now is this, again, an area that we want to tread down? And if it is, how can we get more feedback from the community? What are some good questions that we could come up with the initial report in order to get feedback in this area? Or what are good data requests that we can send to ICANN in order to develop better recommendations for this area? So just if we could get everyone's consideration on those areas, it would be very beneficial for us. Jeff, you have your hand up as well. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. Let me just be a little bit more specific on the request that we got from the RPM group. So there were a number of trademark owners, the IPC, but also the BC and some others, that brought up to through the RPM group that they experienced issues with generic GTLD registries, so non-brand registries, that excluded premium names from the Sunrise process in some cases, and or created a list of names that matched trademarks that were priced higher than all other registrations, and or in general priced Sunrise at a price that was much higher than the general registration fee. So if you waited until general availability before registering it, it would be a lot cheaper than trying to get your name during Sunrise, although you run the risk of during Sunrise, during general availability of not getting that name. So these were not issues for the RPM group in the sense that they didn't necessarily impact the policies of the RPM, but were mechanisms looked at by certain people as ways to circumvent the RPM. There were a lot of those comments. And so we have been presented with the issue, with a couple different issues. One is, should there be any policies that would, if we could somehow do this, that would address those IP owners' concerns? Or is there something that a tool we could give to contract compliance to look at the, even if there's no specific violation of the contract, the wording of the contract, is there a such thing as violating the spirit of the RPM? And in that, we know that ICANN has made a conscious decision that it did not want to get into the regulating of pricing. So that issue needs to be separated out. We're not talking about regulating pricing, but more the question of what if the pricing is used as a tool to circumvent the Sunrise process, things like that. So those are the issues that have been referred to us from the RPM group. And so this is something that we will frame questions on for the preliminary report, because I would assume, or I'm making the assumption, that this is a much more in-depth conversation than what we have for now. But they are certainly questions that need to be considered, and certainly ones in which we should be getting feedback on. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve. For the deliberations and make it more clear for the group. And also we'd like to seek more feedback on this before we're making any calls on whether we want to cover those and also how we're going to address that if we decide it is within the scope.
So, Alexander, please go ahead.
Yes, this is Alexander Schubert. Jeff, just a very quick response to the issue of generic premium terms or strings are being held back from the Sunrise. As probably not all of you are aware, the intellectual property or the IP protection was abused by bad actors. So people registered trademarks in certain jurisdictions, and they entered them into the trademark clearinghouse, and then they used those trademarks to get valuable domain names. That happened all the time. That happened with .us when .us was liberated. It happened with .eu, with .info. Every time a new GTLD was introduced, exactly that what happened to get the top premium domain names. And in fact, if you look, almost every generic term is registered as a trademark somewhere. So if you do not exempt the top premium terms from the Sunrise period, what happens is people snag them up for Sunrise cost, and you cannot sell them anymore. Thanks.
Thank you. And I think Greg
hands
on. Please go ahead,
Greg. Great. Thank you. Greg Shatton for the record. Responding to the previous speaker, I'm not sure that's first, I think that the instance of probably not more than one or two bad actors abusing the trademark system and the Sunrise process appears to be largely an edge case, and does not widely occur. It does not happen all the time. It happened, you know, some very specific instances that have been written up in the press, and doesn't appear to be widespread. What is widespread appears to be trademarks and not just so-called generic terms, but trademarks of all sorts, even those that are essentially unique or those that are clearly identifiable as premium because of their association with a brand and the reputation of that brand, that were put on premium lists, and that clearly intentionally, to my mind, targeted trademark owners as a way to gouge them, not a situation where a bunch of – there were some other situations where kind of common words were held out as premiums, and not because they had particular value to trademark owners, but because they were, you know, generally, you know, seen as valuable, whether it's, you know, business or sex or whatever it might be, which I don't know that those are trademarks, but I think it really clouds the issue turns the issue on its head to say that this was done as a way to avoid bad actors when those bad actors weren't really even anticipated. That may, you know, avoiding abuse of the trademark clearinghouse and dubious trademark application, trademark registration, you know, is one issue, but I think it's disingenuous by far to deny that it was done as a way to look for a way to get trademark owners to pay through the nose. And whether I think it's a, for instance, Facebook, I know was hit with a number of these. One could make a rather strained argument that Facebook is, you know, it can also be seen as just kind of a word in the English language. But clearly you put that on a premium name list not because Facebook is highly desirable as a domain in and of itself. It's highly desirable because of the company Facebook that has added value to it. So let's not be fooled here about what's happening. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg.
Can I quickly respond to
Sure, go ahead, Alexander.
Okay, so it's again Alexander Schubert. And I will respond just rather quickly because we are going down a rabbit hole here. Greg, I totally share your concern that some registries aimed at trademark owners and tried to extort sums from them. That's unquestionably happened and that will happen in the future and it has to be addressed. But I myself am a domainer since 1997, since 21 years, and I participated in all sunrises, .info, .eu, .us, and whatnot. You're speaking to the guy who got football.us and baseball.us as a German in the trademark period. I can tell you, I'm on domainer meetings since, I don't know, over 10 years, and I hear people talking. This was abused wildly in the 2012 round. People submitted all kinds of generic terms for exactly that reason. I personally have lists from domainers with hundreds of trademarks only registered and submitted to the trademark clearinghouse to get generic terms. So don't play it down. It's a big, big issue. If you are a registry and you want to sell premium domain names, you have to exempt them. Of course, not a name like Facebook, but a name like hotel or hotels or sex or porn or whatever. Thank you.
Hey, Sophia, I'm going to jump in really quick and say that I think that there's significant interest to further explore this. And Jeff just put in about the TMCH not going down that path. That's a very good point. But I do think it would be very beneficial if we could collaborate a little bit with the RPMs. Kathy stated that there's some data gathering going on right now in regards to this topic, perhaps. I could be wrong if I read that incorrectly. Please correct me. But I think it would do best if we look to see what data we can get. And if the RPMs are already doing that, let's work with them. But let's focus on what questions we can ask into the initial report to get more feedback from the community. Sophia, I'll turn it back over to you.
Sure. Thank you, Michael, and thank you. I definitely agree with that approach. That is also reflected in some of the workshop members also say that it's very beneficial and helpful to have data and evidence about the extent of those issues are documented, because I think that will help us to understand, the scope and also the seriousness of this kind of issues, and being able to find a better solution. So I said Jeff have another comment. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. We need to be very careful here to not duplicate work that's going on in the RPM. Our issue, which I appreciate Alexander bringing up his point, our issue is not what goes into the TMCH, whether what's in the TMCH, whether we don't like it. That's not our issue. Our narrow issues are around the edges, which means one of the questions is whether registries are pricing trademarks higher because they're trademarks or using that to circumvent the RPM. So the relationship of Alexander's question is, are registries actually putting marks that they know are in the TMCH at a higher price, thereby circumventing the RPMs? Or that's the theory, or are they really just putting terms on there which coincidentally may match terms that are in the TMCH because they potentially have other meanings or other when used not in the trademark sense, they have other purposes, I guess. So it's not, let's be very careful. This is not the group to decide whether we like what's in the TMCH, don't like it, what types of marks are in there, what is not in there. All of that, that's the RPM group, and that's they are collecting data on that, and perhaps it may be worth, if you're going to ICANN 61, it may be worth attending some of the RPM sessions if you have an interest in that. But we don't want to duplicate efforts, and we will absolutely coordinate. So where there are issues that touch on each other, we'll certainly work with the RPM group. And, in fact, Susan Payne, who's not on this call because she's traveling, is our liaison of this PDP to the RPM PDP. And so we'll work through her as well to make sure that the groups are coordinated. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. And we have just light of time. We have 5 minutes more for the call. So Jim, please go ahead.
Sure. Yep. Thanks, Jim Prendergast, for the record. You know, Greg, just I put it in the chat, but I think what you raised, I've heard anecdotally. In one session, I heard Susan Calabucci talk about the Facebook experience. But, you know, Susan and Facebook are pretty sophisticated people, and I'm sure that they instigated some sort of compliance action against those registries that were, you know, undertaking that alleged behavior. So, you know, it'd be great to find out, A, what is ICANN compliance have to say about that behavior? Is it, in fact, permitted, or was it, you know, was there some sort of action taken by compliance to correct it? But also, you know, Greg, I don't want to pick on you, but you said this is widespread. But I'm hearing Jeff say these are edge cases. So I guess we need to get a better sense of how widespread this actual, you know, activity is before we decide to move into what's some pretty delicate space around ICANN controlling pricing, but also, you know, instituting community-wide policies, you know, as it relates to the operation of registries, both, you know, generic and dot brands. You know, are we taking a hammer this thing when we actually need a scalpel? Thanks.
Thanks, Jim. Sorry, I'm just going to chime in really quick. We've got 4 minutes left, and we still need to announce what we're going to talk about at ICANN 61. I'm going to ask that Greg and Jeff can speak their points within 30 seconds each, if you would, please. Sorry to jump in, Sophia.
No problem. Thanks. Greg, please go ahead.
Thanks, Greg Chatton. Just briefly, I agree that we need to kind of move beyond the anecdotal and claims by one or the other wing, if you will, that something is widespread or isn't widespread. Try to get the best knowledge. I would say anecdotally that there appear to be a number, certainly far from a majority, but a number of registries that sought to take premium profits off of trademarks chosen for that reason and not merely being swept up in a list of strings that might be of wide interest. And it's trying to figure out how to deal with that. And I agree that I'd much rather use a scalpel than a hammer to deal with this. So I think that, you know, the approach that implicitly might run from what Alexander said, and I don't think he was actually advocating for that approach, would also kind of be a hammer approach, saying that it's all happening as kind of a defensive maneuver or saying, you know, getting into issues of what is and isn't a trade secret. Trying to find a way to isolate the behavior of bad actors is a real challenge. If we can find some way to do that, we'll have made some real progress. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you.
Jeff, I'll be real quick. Oh, sorry. I was going to jump in because I know we're running out of time. I put a comment in chat. Karen did as well. And I forgot to mention, there was a PICDRP filed on the practices of .feedback. There are certain people in this group, put them on the spot, that filed that case. If they want to provide some input, I encourage that. But at the end of the day, the panelists found fraud committed by the registry, but there was nothing in the agreement that punished fraud. So there was nothing that ICANN compliance could do. So one of the things that we should consider and put in the initial report is to give ICANN compliance some sort of way to sanction registries that are found to have committed fraud. Obviously, there should be due process in there to make sure that the registry can appeal and all that kind of wonderful stuff. But where fraud, and the fraud was in relationship to circumventing the RPMs and our trademark owners. So where that happens, we should provide a mechanism for compliance, or should we, I guess is the question, that we need to address. Thanks.
Yeah, I think we can state this in our communication to the work track to seek further feedback on this. Thank you, Jeff. And next one is Alan.
Thank you very much. I'll be very quick. I think we need to be careful about using the term widespread. To go into past history, domain tasting was not widespread, but was considered a serious issue. So I think we need to be very careful about using widespread as the criteria for addressing an issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. And then the last one, Greg? No. Okay. So I think we're done with a lot of feedback today. So Michael, do you want to bring up the topic that we're going to discuss?
So this is currently thank you, Sophia. Sorry. So this is currently still on the table for discussion, of course, but we're contemplating discussing vertical integration at the upcoming ICANN 61. There was a lot of good feedback in our last call, and it looks like that there's definitely a lot more parties that we should invite for more feedback within the official initial report, of course, but I think perhaps having this discussed in an open forum would offer more analysis and room to frame how the initial report should be written. So let's just keep that in mind. We're not, obviously, that's not a final decision, of course. We could do closed TLD still too, Kathy. It's not a final decision. We're going to send this out to the full working track tomorrow, I think, and see if there's any final ideas about how to move forward. So I'll probably ask that we close it on about Tuesday or Wednesday next week. So, all right, everyone, you have a great weekend, and thank you for joining us for this hour of Work Track 2. Join us again in ICANN 61. Safe travels to everyone, and thank you again. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Meeting has been adjourned. Have a great day, everyone.